Swiss Army Nation, welcome to your podcast. This show is about you, your passion, and your experiences. Join us for panel discussions, interviews, fan profiles, and so much more. When the curtain drops, the excitement begins. So let's go. Hello, my friends, and welcome to episode 133 of the Kiss Army Nation podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Pasquale Vary.
And I am Claudius Pera. Welcome to the show, everyone.
If you want a stocking stuffer for this holiday season, I would highly recommend this book, I Know the Words, The Unbelievable But True Stories of a Wannabe Rockstar by our guest, Scott Liefer. But you may be asking yourself, who is Scott Liefer? Well, he's just like you and me, except he had some pretty extraordinary experiences. So to tell us about those experiences and his book, Kiss Army, please welcome Scott Liefer. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks, guys. Wonderful to be here, and thank you so much for having me.
Nice to have you, man. So nice. Cool. Yeah, Scott, you just to start with, you sent us a short video directly from Madison Square Garden for our last episode, introducing a song you wrote along with Jeff Pongo called Last Kiss. So having seen the final show, this is a good question. So what are your thoughts about the concert?
You know, first of all, I caught your podcast last week, and that what an amazing breakdown of everything. I'm not sure if I could even do justice to the final shows.
Well, that episode was 2.5 hours.
You know, I went to the final two shows and, you know, brimming with excitement, just like everybody else. It was so great to be in New York City, being around the entire Kiss Army, Kiss Navy friends, you know, people just everywhere. But, you know, throughout the shows, just like a lot of you, I was praying they would do just something a little special, you know, acknowledge Ace and Peter, acknowledge Bruce and Eric, Vinny, Mark, just, you know, go back in time a little bit and just give some credit to the history. And beyond playing the songs, you know, that they fell short on that. So I was hoping maybe the set would be a little different. I've seen, I think, 6 end of the road shows, and they were all fantastic. And these shows are no different. And, you know, that was almost the problem for me. They were no different. Mm-hmm. The one thing that was different, though, being in the audience, especially the last show, I mean, I can't believe I actually cried during War Machine. I'm not sure if anybody's ever cried during War Machine. You know, but with everybody doing the fist and that thing, I was like, wow, this is the last time I'm going to experience that. You know, so the whole thing, especially the final show, was very emotional being in the crowd.
Yeah, of course.
So you can't beat the emotion. You can't beat the camaraderie. And the shows themselves were, you know, the spectacle we've all come to know and love. You had the fireworks, the confetti, the just everything. You know, even Paul's shtick in between songs. You know, everything you want in a Kiss show, you had it.
Exactly.
But it was bittersweet, and it just lacked a little bit of something for me, and the avatars didn't bring it home. You know,
that's for sure.
Yeah, that was my next question, a little bit off of script. But what was your reaction after the final chords of Rock and Roll Night with that beautiful smoke and everything that was massive? So then all of a sudden, you know, these images start to appear on the screen. What was your reaction? What were you confused? How did you react?
Yeah, you nailed it. You know, I was about 10 rows from Gene. I had an amazing seat on the side. And right near that screen, right behind them. And it was utter confusion. You know, I expected to hear God Gave Rock and Roll to You, but I didn't know what in the world I was seeing on the screen.
Right.
So I was confused. You know, Paul didn't look quite like Paul to me. I didn't think the images were quite right.
Yeah.
I was expecting something totally different too. You know, I thought they were going to maybe raise a banner to the rafters in honor of the number of shows Kiss played at Madison Square Garden, or maybe, you know, they certainly weren't going to release a new song, but I thought maybe they would announce the next version of Live Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I won't rule it out 100%. You know, maybe it'll be phenomenal and somehow reel us back in, and maybe they'll bring in a whole new generation of fans. And I don't want to look at it totally negatively, but for me, I just, you know, I was hoping for something just a little different.
Right. I think we're all on the same boat on that one. And Scott, you know, going back to that fantastic weekend. So did you participate in the New York experience, you know, the pop-up store, the Metro cards, you know, the papers, the the infamous $60 pizza. So what did you do?
Well, a couple of things. One, I don't go anywhere near the New York subway. Not even a KISS subway card can get me there. I've never had great experiences on the subway in New York. I didn't really participate too much in the material things.
Okay.
It's funny. I went by the pop-up store. The line was a mile long. And I decided I just wanted to spend my time with friends.
Good.
After the fact, I saw the black and white jacket that they're selling that is now available on KISS Online, of course. And that's a beauty. I'm tempted on that one. But no, I didn't actually really do any of the physical shopping or pizza boxing. I came in on Friday afternoon. I left on Sunday morning.
Okay.
And it was a whirlwind. You know,
for the shows.
Up with friends everywhere. I brought books to a few people, connected with people from all over the world. So as far as reuniting with my KISS Army and KISS Navy friends, I mean, it was an absolute success and I partook in it. You know, it reminded me a little bit of when the KISS crews left out of New Orleans and walked down Bourbon Street, you saw KISS shirts everywhere.
Yeah.
And that was the coolest thing to me. I mean, anywhere you went in the city, KISS shirts everywhere, you know, people giving each other that little look or nod.
Exactly.
You know, it,
that's
it just
a beauty.
Felt special.
That's the beauty, man. That we can, you know, we were talking about that, you know, with Pasc on some of the previous episodes. That was the highlight of the weekend for sure. Just before I pass the puck to Pasc, were you one of the lucky ones getting the golden ticket?
No golden ticket.
Me neither.
I had no idea. It's funny. I went to one of the bars after, and somebody's like, "Did you get one of these?" And
yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. Exactly.
Like, what are you talking about? And no, we were in a hurry to get out of the garden after walking down six flights of escalators or whatever. You know, we were just ready to hit the bars, which we did. And every bar that we went to, you know, just packed with KISS fans. Again, it was like I almost felt like I was on the cruise. I even made a joke to somebody that, man, I feel like I got my sea legs a little bit there, you know, a little wobbly. So it's kind of funny.
So like Claudio mentioned, we used your video Last KISS to end last week's podcast, and we got a lot of positive feedback on that video.
Did
actually
you?
People were saying it brought me back to the good old days, and it brought back some really good memories. It was a nice way to end that podcast, so thanks again for letting us know about that video.
Sure.
So speaking of which, you know, what was your long-term plan for that particular video? How did it come about exactly?
Let me give you a little background. So the song's actually called KISS Goodbye, very, very similar title. And I was in a hotel room in Chicago traveling for work back in 2016. And, you know, I tell the story in much more depth in the book. I'll give you the kind of the Cliff Notes version. So it was an absolute frigid night. It was probably 5 degrees out. And I wasn't about to set foot back outside. But, you know, I've been writing songs since I was 12 years old, 13 years old. You know, basically 40 years of writing songs. And many of those songs, I've sat down and said, you know, I'm going to be Paul Stanley tonight and try to write the next KISS song. But I'm like, well, what do I write about at this point? And I'm like, this was a little before they announced the end of the road. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try to write an anthem. It's been a long time since KISS has come out with a new album or really a great anthemic song. So I'm going to pretend I'm Paul and I'm going to write the last great KISS song. And I sat in my room. I came up with this chorus almost right away. You know, let's live like there's no tomorrow. Parting is such sweet sorrow. There won't be any tears tonight, but we still got time before it's our last KISS goodbye. And I came up with this chorus and I had a melody for it. And then I worked all night long on the verses. I probably came to work a little beat up the next day and tired, but I worked all night long to just try to nail what a KISS song would be like. And it kind of, I wanted it in the vein of sort of Psycho Circus meets maybe one of the older classics, you know, have a modern KISS sound, but also the old feel too. And my songwriting buddy, Jeff Pongo, you know, one of my best personal friends, who's an incredible guy that can play every instrument, do all the studio work, sing too. And I sent him my voice demo. And he's like, man, that's really good. I think we can work with that. So I went to his studio a month or two later, laid down an actual vocal track over the music he came up with, which was just spot on. You know, his bandmate, another good friend of mine, Mark Sherman, played drums on it. If you notice at the beginning, there's a little tiny shock me, little drum roll at the beginning. Just to, you know, again, a little throwback to the old days. And we were like, wow, this thing is really good. How do we get it to KISS? And in the book, I tell basically a story about 7 years of trying to get this to the right people. I started out, I handed a copy of it to Keith LaRue at a show in Worcester, Massachusetts, towards the end of 2016. And then I wound up getting in touch with Doc through email. And Doc was like, wow, very, very interesting. Let me pass this around. You know, so I got immediate feedback from Doc within like 20 minutes of sending him the song. And then it kind of lingered. The cruise came up. I ran into him on the cruise and talked about it a little bit more. He's like, you know, we're focused now on our next phase of KISS, which was the end of the road. And I just kept working on him, wound up doing a couple of meet and greets with Gene over time, a meet and greet with Paul. And so in my mind, I might've been a little bit delusional to anybody else, but I really believed this song was going to be a song that KISS would entertain recording. You know, I was hesitant because I knew Paul was very public about we're not going to do any new music. Mm-hmm. But I just felt the song, you know, nailed the sentiment of the end. It was sort of an ode to the fans and an ode to the band. And, you know, it almost got there. The other funny story I kind of tell in the book is finding the right singer for it. Mm-hmm. I tried guys from KISS cover bands. I tried other people who wanted credit for the song if they were going to sing on it. And, you know, all kinds of different things. I'm like, you know, I just want a glorified demo. I even reached out to like the classic 78 guys, you know, and they wanted to focus on their own project, which is understandable. So I'm like, man, how do I nail the Paul Stanley sound? And finally, I got this great singer, this guy, John Robert Murphy, who really wasn't a KISS fan. And so, you know, in the book, it's kind of funny. I explained how I almost gave him like a KISS 101 on, you know, you got to use Stanley's accent to be like, oh, yeah, and do all this stuff. So we did the training and got a pretty good version down, and I got all this great feedback from, you know, as close as I could get to the inner circle, different authors, different podcast people, and unanimously people like, wow, this should be the next KISS song. KISS should record this song. And so finally, I'll take you to the very, very end. You know, a couple of months ago, Pongo and I were sitting down and he's like, you know what? At this point, there's really nothing else to do. I tried reaching out to Todd Kearns, actually, to get him to sing on it as well. You know, Bruce and that whole 80s period, that's my favorite KISS stuff. And I'm like, you know, maybe I can get somebody connected to that. And I, you know, I know Todd a little bit from the cruises and he was just too busy. So we're like, you know what? We're just going to make a real heartfelt video with our own footage that kind of shows our KISS experience and tag as many friends as possible so they can all share it with their friends. And I think it spread pretty well.
And what was the initial reaction to the song?
You know, we probably released it maybe a little too late. It's coming, you know, right near the end of the road. But I mean, I never heard one negative thing. The reactions were just like, wow, this is what KISS should have recorded. This, you know, or play this behind some tribute video or do something with it, you know. But, you know, from the inside of the KISS camp, Gene and Paul, they both accepted the song. They actually took it from me. I have video of Gene like reading through the lyrics and seeming kind of excited about it. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it just wasn't in the cards. They're not going to record, you know, they weren't using outside writers anyhow in the last couple albums. You know, so I'm not going to be the Gerard McMahon or the Is That You guy. Or something. That was kind of my goal. You know, that's been my dream since I was like 12 years old. Sort of kind of write the next KISS song. And
I imagine,
I feel in my heart, I don't know if I really got close. I might still be a little delusional, but at least,
well, you never know. You might be surprised, man. Who knows? Who knows?
At least it's out there. Yeah. People can hear it and listen to it and hopefully enjoy it.
Right.
So now that we reached the end of the road, are you getting like a renewed interest in the song by fans?
You know, it's funny. People that have read the book have read that chapter and they've been like, wow, man, I can't believe what you went through to pitch a song. You know, the money you spent to like join meet and greets and just tag along and, you know, bending over backwards to get people to listen to this. So I don't know what's next for it. You know, I'm not sure what I can do at this point. Everyone that hears it loves it. I've shared it on Facebook. I don't want to sort of shove it in people's faces. But man, I just wish more people could hear the song, or maybe we could do it one more time with somebody that sounded even more like Paul. Mm-hmm. And just like sort of nail what it would have sounded like. Mm-hmm. I think musically it's there. I mean, if you listen to that, the music track,
it is a great tune. It is a great song.
I mean, you would think KISS played on it.
Yeah.
At least modern KISS or what, you know. sort of has that Psycho Circus sound a little bit.
Definitely. Scott, you know, so you mentioned your book many, many times, and of course we're going to be now concentrated on that. So you begin your book with a definition of unbelievable, okay? That so you said something like something so unimaginable and unfathomable that it could only happen to Scott Leifer. So tell us, are you a rock star, a musician, a songwriter, a promoter? Who's exactly Scott Leifer?
It's funny. I'm basically almost none of those things.
None of the above. None of the above.
Songwriter, yes. I do fall into that category, but that's not really who I am. You know, first and foremost, I'm a family guy. You know, I live out in Mansfield, Massachusetts. I've got an incredibly supportive wife, Dawn. She's allowed me to go on all these rock and roll adventures and help make them all possible. So without her, none of this would have happened. I have two wonderful daughters that are both at UMass, the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. One of them's in grad school. The other one's a sophomore. Okay. And, so very much a family guy. I've worked for a federal banking agency, the FDIC, for 30 plus years now.
Oh, wow.
Right out of college. And so I'm a bank examiner by trade. You know, I'm a finance guy. Music's like very much my side hustle. I'm a nerd. I hate to say it. I'm a self-confessed nerd. I play Scrabble competitively. I compete in tournaments, you know, across the country, mostly now just the national tournament every summer. I go and play. My dad plays as well. So that's fantastic. We were in Las Vegas this past summer. This coming summer we'll be in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's South Bend, Indiana, playing Scrabble. And I'm an incredibly avid music fan, not just Kiss, but many other artists. So I started writing songs when I was in seventh grade, and I started writing, you know, Weird Al type stuff. But very, very quickly after that, I got into Kiss and Judas Priest and Motley Crue and Scorpions. And I started writing songs, you know, I'm 12 years old, 13 years old, and I'm writing songs about hookers and drugs and alcohol parties, stuff that I either had never experienced or would never.
That's right.
But that being said, my love for words, my love for Scrabble and writing songs never stopped. And it's funny you asked if I was a musician too. I can't play any instruments. I have a guitar next to me over here, and it's like a display item. You know, I can fumble around. I can play like part of "Lick It Up," and that's about it. But I hear melodies in my head. You know, listening to so much music, I hear melodies. I come up with song titles. I've written maybe 1,000, 2,000 songs.
Really? Oh my god!
Yeah, I have two albums. Believe it or not. You'll see them out there on iTunes if you're really curious. Again, the singing won't be great. It's me singing, but the song structure and some of the songs are very, very good. And that's something I've been able to take a little bit further, you know? So again, I'm kind of a geeky guy who just loves music. Kiss was my first passion and kind of never really lost that passion. I do a lot of things, but really music's on the side, and I've never written a book before. I just had this collection of experiences that kept growing and growing and growing. And over time, people see my pictures, they see my videos on Facebook, and they're like, man, how do you do this stuff? How does this even work? Mm-hmm. And they're all, every experience is just a little bit different. The artists are kind of diverse and unique. And at some point I was like, you know what? I'm going to start getting this down in writing. And I started it earlier this year, and I just couldn't stop.
How long did it take you to write the book?
Believe it or not, it only took me about 4 or 5 months.
Oh, look at that. Wow.
Yeah, my wife, I've gone on a bunch of my trips, and we've gone on a bunch of trips together, obviously, but she went on a trip with some girls to Disney, one of her best friends to Disney earlier this year in February. And when she was away, I'm like, you know what? I started drafting out a little table of contents, and I'm like, I'm just going to write an intro to the book. And I couldn't stop. Every night after work for like 2 or 3 hours, instead of working out and watching TV and doing other things, I just kept writing and writing and writing. Wow. And the momentum was there. And I'm like, you know what? I want this book done before Kiss's final shows. I want to include the Kiss goodbye story. I think, you know, you can tell from the lettering, even the I Know the Words lettering, it's kind of the Kiss style
Of
lettering. So
course,
everything about it, I'm like, you know, I want this to kind of hit at the right time, and I want it out before the holidays. And plus, I want to move on to other things. You know, I kind of never stop writing, and I want to work on some songs and do other things. So it was really important for me to get it out this year and just keep rolling.
That was in your to-do list. That's great, man.
Exactly.
Awesome.
No, I mentioned in the intro that you're just like you and me, right? But no, you sound like a rock star. You really do. And in your book, you expanded the definition of unbelievable. And I quote, "It is unbelievable that an ordinary middle-aged guy with no rock star looks and minimal ability has sung alongside artists such as Kiss, Scorpions, Rick Springfield, John Waite, Sebastian Bach, Ricky Rocket, Butch Walker, and Kim Winger. Jammed with comedian Bill Burr and had so many other incredible rock and roll encounters. If you're not a rock star, how did that come about? How did that happen?"
It's just like this series of fortunate events. So many different things have happened. At the beginning, I'll give you the first one. The first story I tell after I give my background, and this is not your traditional biography. It's not going to be, you know, I started out as a cute little fat baby and, you know, we struggled and we lived in a car and we did this and that. And then, you know, finally I learned how to play guitar. Now, you're not going to hear all that. It's not a traditional. I'll give you the background of myself and you'll learn a little bit about who I am and what makes me tick. But it very quickly gets in the stories, and it's just as much about the artists as it is about me and how gracious and amazing they were during these experiences. So getting back to the Kiss story, I guess it all started at a Kiss convention back in 1995. And I went to the Boston convention and somebody walked around the microphone like, "Does anybody know the words to Lick It Up?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I do." And so I wound up singing Lick It Up as Kiss, you know, Kiss was facing me. And it was just incredible, you know, Paul pointing, and something goes wrong at every single one of my little singing experiences. So when you say, "Yeah, I'm kind of like a rock star," I'm like a rock star, but not definitely not one. You know, I've performed with them, I've been in like very close orbit with them. But you know, like even with Lick It Up, Paul's like, "Who's gonna sing Lick It Up?" And I start singing like a little too early before the band starts. And yeah, you know, there was this weird little awkward pause, and then I kick into it. And sometimes the adrenaline goes, and in that one, I actually kind of did really, really well, except towards the very end of the first verse, "It ain't a crime to be good to yourself," I had this Peter Brady moment where my voice just cracked. And
oh, really?
Everything was going so good, and then the voice kind of cracked, you know? But, you know, you can read the YouTube comments under it, you know, somebody's like, "Wow, that sounded even better than Paul." So,
oh,
know,
really?
I've had good moments, I've had some not so good moments, but... yeah, it's just been amazing. So that was just one experience. Rick Springfield happened backstage where I had bought a guitar as a gift for Pongo, actually, for doing some work with my daughter in the studio. And I was kind of talking to Rick after about, I'm holding a guitar. I'm like, "I can't play this thing, but I'd love to sing a few seconds of my favorite Rick Springfield song with you," which is actually not Jesse's Girl. It was Love Somebody. And he's like, "Well, man, let's sing it together and I'll play air guitar."
Oh,
so
geez.
I have Rick Springfield air guitaring next to me as I'm singing it. And these stories just keep going. They're all different. Like I go to see Winger one night, Kip Winger, a solo show. And he's like, "Hey, does anybody out there know the words to Miles Away?" And that's one of my only superpower is I know the words pretty much to any, you know, popular hair band or, you know, 80s rock song. So I knew every word to Miles Away and I got up there and sang it with him. I've also been lucky enough to go to rock camp. I've been to two rock camps now. So that's why I wound up singing with the guys from Scorpions. Even that one, I don't seem to get starstruck very often, but for some reason, being across from Matthias and Rudolph, you know, holding their guitars, looking exactly like they looked in 1983 or 1984, I panicked. I'm like, "Oh my
God.
That
got you. That got
how
you.
Does,
man.
How does Rocky Like a Hurricane begin?" You know? Thank God I pulled it. It was like muscle memory. I pulled it out at the last second, you know, and I didn't miss a beat. But so these stories are all different. They're all funny. There's a lot of dad jokes and kind of humor in here as well. So you're going to laugh more than you'll cry, I think. Like, one thing I should mention too, you know, connecting this back to the Kiss world a little bit, is the foreword to the book was written by Cheryl Rixon Davis. And you might recognize her. I'm actually wearing one of her pieces of jewelry. She's the Kiss jewelry person when you're on the cruise, the Paul Stanley jeweler, and just a fabulous, fabulous person. And I connected with her a bit on the cruises. And, you know, she knows Paul Stanley. She knew Freddie Mercury. You know, she knows the rock stars and the rock star life more than anybody. And her foreword is just so compelling on why you should read this book. She says it better than anybody. You know, it kind of takes you inside so many legendary venues and up close and personal with these rock stars. And you see kind of, you know, their humorous or childlike side as well as that, you know, as they go through these experiences with me. So that's just a nice little Kiss connection. And she states things much more eloquently than I'm probably stating them right now.
So would you say this book is more of a diary for you?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not exactly a diary. It's not in chronological order. I like to think it's as random as the events occurred. You know, it's in a flow that makes sense to me. And each chapter, you know, it focuses on a different artist or event, and it kind of sets it up in the same way. There's like, there's this interesting dynamic to each chapter where first you hear a little bit of background on the artist, you know, pick John Waite, for instance. You know, you'll hear a little bit about how many top 10 songs he had and how he was in the Babies and then he had his solo career and he was, you know, in Bad English. And, you know, you get this background on the artist and you probably learn some nuggets of information you didn't really know that well. Then I describe why I like the artist so much, what songs really meant so much to me and why. And I think, you know, I've gotten a lot of feedback from people on, man, I didn't even know much about this artist, but I looked up these songs and now I love them. I just got that album. You know, and then the third piece is of each chapter is sort of how our lives intertwined. How in the world did I come across a situation, you know, where Sebastian Bach and I are singing at his birthday party and, you know, I'm singing 18 in a Life with him, a song that I cranked.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Love that song.
So there's just so many, you know, you learn about the artist, you learn about my passion for them and then bringing it full circle. How in the world did this guy wind up, you know, kind of chilling with them even for a small point in time. Mm-hmm.
But you know what I get out of all this, Scott, is that of course you were there, you know, at the right moment at the right place, but you also you took your chances, right? Because you know when musicians they were asking who knows the words of this, who wants to sing, you were there, man, and you took the chance. Some other people might have been there, you know, next to you, and they, you know, they kind of passed by the opportunity. You didn't. You go for it.
Yeah, that's a little bit of the moral of the story, I guess, you know, is
that's right.
At least this story is don't be too shy or too inhibited that you know, if you want to do something, maybe just take the chance.
Exactly. That's
you
right.
You never know what's going to happen.
That's right.
Like sometimes sometimes you fall short, like with Kiss Goodbye. I didn't make it to the finish line. But, you know, in other situations, I wound up singing Rocky Like a Hurricane with the guys from Scorpions, you know, so.
You never know. The story is not it's not over, man. Maybe that song, you know, will make it somehow.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned to us before how the book came about. But, you know, of course, as you're getting into any artistic venture, new, something that you don't know. So there are always challenges. OK, so what were some of the challenges of writing this incredible story?
You know, I'd never written a book before. In fact, the way I write is two different ways before this book. You know, I write for work about bank examination type things, you know, the risk in financial institutions and, you know, things that have to do with problem banks or enforcement actions or bank applications. So stuff that would be pretty dry to the average person and you don't have much creative liberty to say what you want.
Yeah,
you
know, with a lot of, you know, legal and contractual, yeah, you know, terms and stuff.
Yeah, financially oriented and legal based, and
yeah,
you know, definitely not for everybody. I find it fascinating, but again, I'm a nerd. But then on the other end, I write songs, and you have to be very efficient. You know, your song has to fit the meter of the music, and it has to be, you know, kind of dead on. You have to be concise and efficient and get things out there. But with the book, for the first time in my life, I was wow, I can just keep going. Very free-flowing, you know, and that's what I did. I pretty much just wrote stream of consciousness, had all these memories and stories to tell. And then, sure, I went back and refined it. So that wasn't so much of a challenge. That was kind of freeing. But I wound up hiring a book designer. I had no idea how to design a cover. I had this concept. And if you look really closely, Pascali, at the cover, you'll see it's me, as a bank examiner, wearing my suit and tie but I have the microphone. And if you look close, there's a stage behind me. There's the lights. There's actually a desk below me, my arms on a desk. And so the cover. Yeah. So the cover concept, I had this incredible designer, this guy, Paul Prizer, out of, he lives in Pennsylvania. He did an amazing job. And if you open up to any of the chapters, you'll see a little design sort of leading into the chapter, like the chapter where I play Scrabble with Gene Simmons, another miraculous story of bringing one part of my world into a rock star's world. I brought a custom Kiss Scrabble board aboard the Kiss Cruise. I wound up having Gene sort of stop an entire meet and greet session with all these people who bought bass guitars to play some Scrabble with me. That chapter has a bunch of Scrabble tiles like inside the beginning of the chapter, the way it's designed, and it looks pretty cool. So my designer, Paul, helped bring that all together. But then there was sort of producing and distributing the book and getting it out there. I know nothing about that. And I have a very full-time day job. So I really haven't had maybe the time to market it and do what I want to do to get it out there as a self-published author. I had to go through this waiting period to get it up on Amazon. So there's like a 6-week period where pre-sales happen. And I felt almost guilty, posting on Facebook every week or two, hey, get my book, pre-order my book. I'm like, I don't want to be like sort of, soliciting my friends to do stuff. But by the same token, I really wanted, that little bump as an author, because maybe it could catch fire. And it sort of did a little bit. The Rock Camp people sent out an email to thousands of people promoting the book. Sleaze Rocks picked up a story on it, which was really cool. In fact, that blew my mind. If you go look at Sleaze Rocks' November stories, you'll see stories about Kiss and Judas Priest and Metallica and then Scott Liefer. And it's like, I should never be mentioned in the same breath as any of those bands. So it's kind of funny, but even that little article, if you click on it and open it, it says, who the heck is Scott Liefer? And they copied one of my Facebook posts, which has a top 10 list on the top 10 reasons you should get my book. So the challenge, I guess, has really been not so much writing it. I think that writing it was easy. Maybe the hard part in writing it was when to stop. I have a few other stories I could have told, a couple of things brewing that I haven't really written about yet. And I'm like, do I wait? Do I hold off another year? Do I keep going? And I'm like, you know what? This is a complete story. It's not the longest book, but it's really intricately woven. And you get to know who I am. You see how these stories kind of relate. And at the end, I kind of connect it all and put it in perspective. And I'm like, you know what? This is done. This is a full book. And I think people are really going to like it.
Awesome. And who would you say it's the audience for your book?
I guess it's sort of two-pronged. It's anyone who loves music. I think you really have to be a music lover. I mean, if you're a casual music fan, you might not quite get it, passion that I have. And then I think anyone who just loves stories about the pursuit of dreams. I certainly always wanted to be a singer, and I'm okay. I mean, I'm not horrible. My videos are out there on YouTube. You can hear songs from my albums. Those are all on YouTube too. Don't bother buying them. But it's more like the passion of this. And if you appreciate that passion and you like even one of the artists, the other way I've kind of marketed it is like I got on some of the fan pages. So I was on the Kip Winger page and the Rick Springfield page, some of their popular Facebook pages and even the Kiss Cruiser page. And I posted a little blurb about the book along with like the first page of each of that chapter for that artist. Okay. And a lot of people are like, wow, that sounds pretty damn cool. And if you're into that artist, some of the artists that you might not know as well too, those stories I think are incredible. Like the Butch Walker story. I'm not sure how many of you know Butch Walker or who he even is. Mm-hmm. He was in a band called South Gang in the 80s. You may or may not have heard of a band you might catch once in a great while on Headbangers Ball.
Okay.
But then he joined a band called Marvelous Three ultimately. And they kind of had a couple albums that were pretty good. And then he's had this great solo career with this underground following, but he's a producer who's produced Taylor Swift and Katy Perry and Avril Lavigne and Green Day and Fall Out Boy. And you can't turn on the radio for more than 2 minutes and flip the dial without hearing a song that he's had an imprint on. Wow. So he's one of my favorite artists. And I actually begin that story by saying, if I was stranded on an island and I could have the catalog of any artist, what do you think I would bring? Most people think I would bring Kiss, right? And it would even have Escape from the Island on it, right? From the album.
Right.
but no, it's probably Butch Walker in his catalog. And Butch was at the final Kiss shows. They were just as inspirational in his career.
Look at that.
You learn a lot about other artists too. Even Jeff Scott Soto is another one, which you guys probably know of Jeff. He sang for Journey for a bit. He sang for Yngwie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I connected with him in a rock camp. And actually, Pongo and I wound up getting him to sing on five of our songs. So if you go on YouTube right now, you can hear Jeff Scott Soto sing a couple of songs that Pongo and I wrote. And
wow.
They're pretty damn good, you know, especially when you compare them to my initial scratch vocal.
So, Scott, as you mentioned earlier, your book is divided into experiences. So in your book, once you set the stage in chapter one, you go right into your love for Kiss in chapter two, entitled Opening Act. So not only are you a rock star, but you're also a superhero, right? And all superheroes have origin stories. So what's your origin story? How did you initially get into Kiss?
So it's funny. I was aware of Kiss at a very young age. When I was 6 years old, somebody bought me a Love Gun puzzle. And so I was mesmerized, right? You have these half-naked ladies in Kiss paints and lying on the ground under, you know, worshiping these superhero figures. And I'm like, wow, what is this? But I really don't think I even heard Love Gun for like another 6 years. And then I had a K-Tel Hit Explosion album. You guys remember
yes.
those albums? They were like collections of like the cool songs, you know, on the radio. And one of them had I Was Made for Loving You on it. So I knew I Was Made for Loving You. I knew Rock and Roll All Night. And that was about it. You know, fast forward a couple of years, I think I saw, you know, when I first saw the video for Heaven's on Fire and Paul, you know, the hands on fire, and I'm like, wow, this is the coolest song ever. And I started becoming infatuated with Kiss. And once Asylum came out, Asylum is my favorite album, I just went like head over heels into Kiss. So I kind of was a little bit backwards in my Kiss fandom. Really, 80s Kiss was okay. my thing. You know, they were what came out when I was a teenager and I was growing up. So I just was the biggest 80s Kiss freak. But almost simultaneously with that, I had a neighbor who had, a friend of mine who had an older brother. And I had gave me a copy of Alive 2, like a tape of Alive 2. So this horrible version. But I'm like, what are these songs? These songs are incredible, too. So my Kiss fandom, you know, just throughout the 80s and into you know, through the Revenge era, it was just insane. And I pretty much kept it up, you know. And even though I was a little critical of Kiss at the beginning of this, you know, this whole podcast, where I said, you know, I was disappointed a little bit in the last show. You know, when I was graduating high school in 1989, I was like, wow, they're almost 40 years old. They're going to be done like any day now.
Right.
You know? Yeah. To me, that was like ancient, right? Yeah. Even though I'm a decade past it. I'm like, wow, these guys aren't going to be performing anymore. And they gave us, you know, 35 more years. So
exactly. Yeah.
You know, couldn't be more appreciative.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So anyway, to answer your question, I was very much an 80s Kiss fan first. And I think that always has the most special place in my heart. I mean, I know love every single Kiss song. The worst Kiss song is still probably better than the best song from most other bands.
I hear you.
You know.
Did you go back in time to check the catalog? So meaning, you know, the 70s Kiss and
with the original
lineup and all this stuff?
Oh, yeah. It happened pretty quickly. But I'd say first I knew the Asylum album, Inside Out, and I knew the Animalize album too. I mean, when they did the Animalize live thing on MTV, and I'd start hearing some of the other songs. I'm like, what album is this song on? What album is that song on? And, you know, I'd spot check the 70s albums and kind of focused on Alive 1 and Alive 2. And then, you know, like everybody else, became a completist. And it wasn't that long until I had The Elder and I had Killers. And, I just devoured all of it.
That's good. So, Pastor, let me go a little bit off script here because I have a question I want to know from Scott. Yeah. So were you happy when they reunited in 96 when they came back to the original lineup?
Yeah, you know. I'm not a big fan of Carnival of Souls, I'll admit.
Okay.
And so I wasn't really that enthusiastic for that, you know, especially coming off of Revenge, where I love Revenge.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was a great style for them. But yeah, I'd never seen, I'd seen Ace Frehley live many times, I guess, you know, through Frehley's Comet and beyond. I'd never seen Peter. I was kind of excited for them to perform again in makeup.
Okay.
I was a little sad, I guess, you know, Bruce Bruce is my favorite all-time Kiss guitarist. And, you know, I was kind of sad that that lineup didn't last very long.
Well, that's why I'm asking. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of a bummer. I loved Eric Carr, too, obviously, you know, probably my favorite Kiss drummer. But, no, I was so excited for them to come back. And I saw that I was second row at the Boston. I'll never forget this either. I went to the show at the Boston Garden, or whatever it was called at the time. And I'm in the second row watching the show. Right behind me was Joe Perry.
Oh, wow.
And then those guys are there in the audience. And, you know, just just the vibe of seeing them in makeup for the first time and shaking back and forth doing Deuce. And
the energy, like, yeah.
Even the videos. So, yeah, I was ecstatic when they reunited. And even, you know, when they came out with a new album on, you know, Psycho Circus all together, I thought that was cool. Not knowing exactly how the sausage was made at that time.
Right.
You don't want to know.
Yeah, exactly. I'm probably better off if I never knew. And I was certainly sad when the farewell happened, you know. I didn't really embrace, I guess, the last two Kiss albums. But, you know, but I was so happy they kept going, and I went to every show I could. The cruises and whatnot.
So, speaking of which, what would you say would be your favorite Kiss experience?
That's a tough question. A lot of stuff to comb through and think about, but probably drumming for Gene Simmons. I told you I can play part of Lick It Up on the guitar. Right. Mm-hmm. I can't play a second of anything on drums. I have no ability to keep a beat. It's embarrassing how bad it is. Any of my close friends watching this, my wife Dawn, who's tried to dance with me before, she knows, you know, I cannot keep a beat. I can't do anything at all remotely drum oriented. And I went to a bass camp that he had on the ship for the people that bought the basses. All I did was accompany somebody to a meet and greet. And then that person had a slot for me to, you know, they said, hey, everyone's getting off the ship. There's room if you want to just sit in the audience for the bass camp. So there were about 20 people there that bought basses, and then their friends and family were sitting in this, you know, small crowd in Spinnakers, which I'm sure you remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember well.
Oh yeah.
And so we're in Spinnakers on the Norwegian Pearl or whatever ship it was. And Gene was teaching a class, and some of these people knew how to play bass. Some of them had never even held a bass before. And there was like a 6-year-old girl up there, and there was like a 70-year-old lady, you know? So just a wide range of people experienced. And Gene gets up there in the most calm, teaching, professional voice I've ever heard. He's like, anyone can write a song. I have an incredible video of this too. I should probably post this. You know, he's like, anyone can write a song. He talked about how John Lennon and Paul McCartney couldn't read music, or Jimi Hendrix, but they wrote incredible songs. And, you know, he turned just into this like school teacher. It was fascinating. It was riveting. I don't think anybody, you know, he had every bit of attention in that room devoted to him. And he casually asked, is there anyone who doesn't know how to play drums, can't keep a beat to save their life? And it was like a rhetorical question. And I'm like, yeah, totally. He goes, you're my drummer. Get up here.
Oh, wow.
No way. Like,
no. He's like, come on. So I got up and sat behind the drum set. And I had his drum. I had Eric Singer's drum tech was kind of hanging in the back. I'm sitting at the drum set, staring out at like 15 to 20 people holding basses, looking directly at Gene. And he's like, keep a beat. Give me like a simple 1-2, 1-2. And of course, I'm like off and fumbling around. And, he, you know, so he spent like a lot of the time coaching me through the drum thing. And at one point he's like, OK, look, you just played a Supreme song. Really? I mean, I'm kind of this. And other times he's like, drummer, have you ever heard of the rhythm method? I'm like, well, I'm not too good at it. I have a couple of kids, you know? So anyhow, it was kind of funny. We had this banter going back and forth the whole time. But it was amazing. He spent like 2.5 hours teaching, you know, everyone in that room. He didn't leave until we all wrote a song together. We wrote this song called Hell Yeah. And it was actually pretty good. I mean, probably better than half the stuff on the vault, you know, and it was really, really fun. And like I said, Gene was every bit the school teacher he was back in the early 70s. He cared so much about the people in that room and making sure that they had a great experience and that they would maybe go home and play that bass.
Oh, man, wow. Gene is great. What a good story, man. I love it.
And I will confess, too, I was always a Paul guy. You know, Paul Songston, aside from War Machine, Paul's songs always kind of hit me the most. But after that experience, Gene was like, you know, just, I looked at him in a whole new light.
Yeah, yeah, the way he treats fans, you know, it's yeah, it's a hell of a hell of a person there, man. So you know, Scott, we wanted to shift to some of the stuff that you do for a foundation. So we know that a portion of the proceeds from this book will be donated to Rock and Roll Fantasy Foundation. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So I've been to two rock camps. I went to one to celebrate my 50th birthday, and that was the one that featured Scorpions and Sebastian Bach. And I thought I would never, ever go back. And I was actually writing this book at the time earlier this year. And they announced a camp that was very much 80s, you know, hard rock based. It was a camp that featured Ricky Rocket from Poison.
Okay.
Along with Richard Fortus from Guns N' Roses and John Five, who had just joined Motley Crue.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a chance to go to a camp and sing Motley Crue, Poison, and Guns N' Roses songs, which actually Guns N' Roses songs and Motley Crue songs are not that easy to sing.
No.
I'm like, well, I've butchered other artists. I might as well try them too. And so that camp was amazing to me for a couple of reasons, not just this singing experience. I mean, I got to perform at the Whiskey a Go-Go. I mean, again, this guy at the Whiskey, that's insane, right? Kiss had just performed there not too long ago. Def Leppard had performed there recently. Now I'm going to, you know, every other band.
Well, it's the Whiskey, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I'm like, wow, I can perform at the Whiskey and I get to perform at the Viper Room. So yeah. I'm like, wow, two legendary LA clubs as part of this experience. I have to do it, right? I mean, what better way to end my book than a chapter on the Sunset Strip? But the other thing was there was this band of young kids at the camp. You know, each band is a rock star counselor. And this book, you know, it not only does it go deep into the Kiss cruise and the Monsters of Rock cruise and all my concert experiences, it goes pretty deep into the camps as well. And anybody that was ever wondering what a rock camp is like, they're incredible. It's run by this guy, David Fischoff, who couldn't be a nicer guy. I mean, the guy's there throughout the camp. He's just so inspiring and so encouraging. And he wants to make sure, you know, you really feel like a rock star for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're put together in a band. I'm in a band with three other guys. One of them's an anesthesiologist. One of them was a naval pilot. And the other one was a judge, you know, a judge in Chicago. So the group of us fumbling our way through like an Aussie song or something, you know, it's just kind of hilarious. And you know, and you have a rock star counselor getting frustrated. Like, come on, guys, you're supposed to be rock stars. You know, you're on your phone, you're doing whatever. So, but at this at the last camp that I was at, there were a bunch of kids there, you know, a couple of teenagers, this 1 7-year-old kid who was drumming to Crazy Train. I mean, the kid was incredible. The kid knew I think me and that kid knew Poison better than anyone else at the camp. You know, the kid asked if we could play Cry Tough together. I'm like, wow, how do you even know that song?
Wow.
You know? And, so just, I was inspired by the youth at the camp. And then they have this really cool thing where you can sort of, not pitch, but you get to play one of your songs and get feedback in front of all the counselors. So you have 7 or 8 rock stars in a room and you can play a song that you wrote or recorded and they give you feedback on the song. And it's pretty, you know, hard feedback. They're like, no, you know, the music's not right or the vocals aren't right or the mix is bad or, you know, you really need to work on the lyrics or the structure. You know, they give you pretty meaningful feedback. And one kid in particular at the camp, he played the song he wrote. I'm like, that's a really good song. It sounds like something like Daughtry could release today or something. You know, it just sounds like this, sort of this modern rock banging song. And somebody told me, you know, he wouldn't have even been at this camp if it wasn't for the Rock and Roll Fantasy Foundation. I'm like, what's that? And there's a foundation that helps people that couldn't otherwise attend this kind of event, you know, tries to bring young people and support the future of rock and roll, give them experiences with rock stars and the exposure. Maybe they can help them take their musicianship to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm like, I didn't write this book to celebrate me exactly. I know it sounds kind of self-serving, you know, I know the words, but in reality, I'm celebrating the artists and their songs and like the impact they had on me. And so if my book can help other people have these experiences, I thought, wow, that would be a great way to, you know, make an impact.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Love it. Thanks. And it's so what you mentioned before about this you know, 4 day span, that was one of the biggest journeys for you. That was the one in Vegas. So that was the because you went to another camp in Vegas, right?
Yeah. Actually, the one I just mentioned was L.A.
OK.
two camps. The first one I went to was in Vegas, and that featured Scorpions and Sebastian Bach. And it was actually supposed to feature Zakk Wylde too. But he had COVID at the time. And so it was kind of cool. We still did some Aussie songs. And so that was my first camp, and it was great. We performed at Club Vamped in Vegas, which is a pretty popular rock club.
Yeah.
And that's the one where I performed with Sebastian doing 18 in Life. And
we also that's the one. Okay.
Yeah, we also performed at the Hollywood Bowl too, which is pretty nice venue too. I'm sorry. It's called Hollywood Bowl. Yeah. It's called the Brooklyn Bowl. Whatever it was. That was in Vegas. And then in LA earlier this year was the one with Poison, Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue.
Okay.
And we got to perform at the Whiskey and
Of course, LA. Wow.
So yeah, both very different experiences, different artists. It was cool. I have a quick John 5 story that was actually pretty cool at that camp too. When it came time to jam, we did Wildside, Motley Crue, Wildside. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my guys are plugging in and setting up, and as the vocalist, I'm just standing there holding a mic. And I went over to John and I said, John, you have one of the notoriously biggest Kiss collections in the world. And I'm like, I'm almost surprised there wasn't a Kiss song on your list to choose from. And I'm like, if you could do one Kiss song, what would you do? And all of a sudden, he thinks about it for a while. He takes his guitar, he plays Strange Ways.
And
it was great. So everyone's looking at us because he's ripping into Strange Ways. I'm starting to sing the first verse. What are you guys doing? And so we had a little Kiss moment.
Love it,
man. I don't know. It takes courage to do the things that you do. I'm not a musician. But I wouldn't have the guts to go into a fantasy camp and even attempt to play drums in front of Gene, play guitar in front of these rock stars, write a song. Forget about it, man. No way.
Yeah, Gene was against. That was against my own volition. I did not want to play drums. If you could have, at that time, I was like, no way. But he kind of forced me. But yeah, man, once you get out there and kind of get the hang of it you experience it, it's kind of fun to keep doing it. But most of these things are unpredictable, and you know, I never knew how they were going to play out.
What's also really cool that in your book, obviously, you dealt with a lot of musical experiences with your favorite artists. But in one chapter, chapter 11, it's basically rockers stepping into your comfort zone, the basketball court.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool one. So I hadn't really talked much yet about the Monsters of Rock cruise. I've been on 6 Kiss cruises. I started on Kiss Cruise 6, the Creatures of the Deep one.
Right.
And then right before the pandemic, in February of 2020, I went on my first Monsters of Rock cruise. And they have different events, sort of like the Kiss Cruise. You know how they have are you smarter than a rock star with Gene and those kind of events and Paul cooking and whatever. So on the Monsters of Rock cruise, they have the same kind of thing, so you think you can shred, and they have these different things, which I cannot shred. so didn't partake in that. But they had basketball. They had the Rockers versus the Average Joes. And so this basketball game where a bunch of rock stars would play against a bunch of cruisers. And you had to apply for it and give your basketball resume. And, fortunately, I've been playing basketball, my whole life. But the last 10, 12 years, I've been in a couple of different men's leagues. And I call them leagues. I mean, they're just a bunch of guys that get together and kind of hack on each other on a Sunday morning or a Wednesday night. And I play pretty regularly, though. I still do. And I signed up for it and I didn't hear anything. So I didn't think I'm just like, OK, I'm sure there were 10 better players than me on the ship. Kind of like my songwriting and singing, I'm OK. I'm good enough to be a little dangerous, but I'm not great. I'm not going to dazzle anybody on the court. But I walked by an elevator bank, like on the first or second day of the cruise. And I saw like an ad on tomorrow at the basketball court, Rockers take on the Average Joes. And my name was like the top name on the list. I'm like, oh boy, I guess I'm playing.
Oh, you were there.
Yeah, I was never notified or I missed the notification. So I went up and started shooting around on the pool deck on the sports deck on top of the ship the day before, and ran into Joel Hoekstra, who actually coordinated the event. And if you don't know who Joel is, guitarist for Whitesnake, previously with Night Ranger, Trans-Siberian Orchestra. The guy's incredible. He's also been part of the rock camps, which at the time I had no idea. He's just an amazing guitar player and an incredible guy and a really competitive guy. And so we wound up playing this game on the top deck of the ship. And it was me and a bunch of cruisers of various skill levels. And then it was Joel Hoekstra, Gary Cherone from Extreme, and then this whole this whole bunch of incredible guitarists. You had Nuno Betancourt, Richie Kotzen,
oh my Doug goodness, Aldrich.
People are like, wow, stay away from their fingers. You know,
yeah, yeah. That's right, exactly. Be careful.
$1 million axe on your hands. And so the funniest story in my book, and actually, if you look at the back of my book for a second, Pascale, if you read the first quote there, I'll actually let you read it if you'd like.
After Scott hit me in the nose, my range increased 2 notes. So I want to thank him.
And that was Gary Cherone.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So what happened was Gary Cherone was covering me in the first game and I was covering him. He went up for a shot and I bit for the fake. So I jumped up pretty high. I come down as he's going back up again. I nail him right in the nose and he goes down on the ground.
No.
So everyone's like, no, you broke Gary Cherone. I'm like, no. He's like my favorite singer on the ship. No. And I just felt so awful, but it wound up being a little inside joke. You know, every time I'd see him, that's the guy who broke my nose. And we had a lot of fun back and forth on it. So we had this incredible game. The Rockers ultimately won. The next year, we played sort of like 2-on-2 stuff because COVID was still happening. They didn't have the big game. And then last year was the third year I played basketball. And we had another incredible game. Sadly, Nuno got hurt in that game. And that went kind of viral. He hurt his knee, blew out his knee during the game.
Mm. Oh, yeah? Oh.
It was sort of just a natural non-contact injury where he was just running and his knee gave out.
Mm.
But... So my basketball adventures are detailed in there, and they're pretty fun.
Look at that.
Again, so, seeing the Rockers in a totally different light.
Of course.
Which leads me to my next question. You know, it's often said you should never meet your idols, especially outside of what they do. Would you agree with that?
I'm going to give you a terrible pun as an example of what's in my book. You know, I wholeheartedly disagree. Playing on an extreme song, wholehearted. No, I mean, in every single one of these encounters, the Rockers have been nothing short of like spectacular. And it's been amazing to see them so focused on making sure my experience was great or that they were having fun. You know, in basketball, they were no longer Rockers. They were like competitive basketball players. Even when I jammed with comedian Bill Burr, which is a story in the book, you know, he took drumming like ridiculously seriously. He played drums with a bunch of my buddies and sort of we have a mutual friend. And we got together and just jammed like a bunch of regular guys. He grew up in the town next to me. Meeting the heroes, you know, I think a lot of it's in your approach. This was never me like hounding these guys and, hey, let me sing. Let me do this. Let me do that. You know, or kind of harassing them around or following around a ship, kind of, you know, breaking the rules of etiquette. Yeah. This is more like respectfully, you know, explaining why I'm such a fan and kind of just naturally getting into the encounter in one way or another. So, no, I encourage everybody to talk to heroes and meet them. It's not always going to be perfect. You know, sometimes they're busy. Sometimes they've had an off day, just like any one of us. But this book really celebrates how great they are.
Hmm. Wow. You know, I was about to ask you about your most memorable experience, but a high point in any Kiss fan or in a Kiss story, I have to say, it must be the Kiss cruise. Okay. So that was something that you have always wanted to do. Could you please take us through the steps describing how you finally got on the ship?
Yeah, it's funny. So the first 5 Kiss cruises, I guess they started when back in like 2010 or 11 or something.
11, yeah.
You know, back then, I have 2 daughters, and back then they were pretty young. They were still trick-or-treating. It was always during Halloween. And, you know, just with my job and family stuff, it was very, very hard to get away. Not only that, I didn't really know anybody going on the cruise. I didn't want to go and get my own cabin or something. I didn't really know how to get into that world. So it was always something I'd see posts and videos and, I'd see set lists and I'd be like, oh my God, they just played, you know, go ahead and pick it. They play Sure Know Something, you know, some kind of song. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they play that. You'd never hear that live in a show. And, I got lucky, very lucky, and went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction when Kiss got inducted. I had actually gone to see an Eddie Trunk TV episode, and somehow they had my email address, and they needed the same company that casted for that, or you know, got people seated, wanted seat fillers for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions. So I got tickets, and I got seated for that. And right in front of me was a woman. And the whole night, everyone sat there, kind of like the final Kiss show, waiting for something big to happen, you know?
Yeah.
Would Would the guys jam at the end? Would there be some kind of all-star jam? Would they play? Nothing really big happened that night, except for me personally. I ran into Carmella Stearns, who was right in front of me. Mm-hmm. And Carmella is like, you know, I looked at her at one point when she was bored to tears during the E Street Band's induction ceremony, where mm-hmm. each of them gave this long-winded speech. And I'm like, you must be a Kiss fan. And she's like, hell yeah. And we started talking and became friends on Facebook. And then I saw her posting about the upcoming cruise. I'm like, man, I wish I could go on that, but I don't know anybody that would go. And she's like, hey, I have a friend who's in the same boat, no pun intended, her friend Joe Martinez. Mm-hmm. And so he and I linked up and became really good friends, and, you know, not really knowing each other, we roomed together. So I got on Kiss Cruise 6. And from then on, we added one of Joe's friends, Ken Radinas, to our little group. And I mean, those guys are now like lifelong friends. Every day we're talking on the phone, we're joking. They're sending me very non-suitable for work kind of messages, making me laugh. And but yeah, that was kind of my gateway into the cruises. And once you have the taste of one of those, man,
you're hooked.
Yeah, you're hooked.
What were some of the highlights on that cruise, Scott?
Man, I mean, meeting people from all over the world. It's crazy to think that I have friends from Germany and South Africa and all over South America and, you know, Canada as well. So, you know, just everywhere. I mean, meeting people from around the globe, that was something that was really eye-opening. You know, the passion that there's other people like me out there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there are plenty of people that like Kiss, but then there's taking it to that sort of next level that's way off the screen here. So that was really cool. Obviously, I love the Kiss karaoke. Like, I'm a karaoke fiend.
I love it.
One place where they'll let me sing all the time. but you're never going to go to Kiss karaoke and, you know, or I'm sorry, regular karaoke out in the world and do something like A Million to One. Or wouldn't you like to know me?
Exactly.
And you know, on the ship, you can do any of those songs.
Exactly. It's
crazy. So I love doing the karaoke. I love some of the bands that I discovered while on the ship too.
Mm-hmm.
Thunder Mother at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great. And I actually got to know their lead singer pretty well. She's really, really cool. You know, I think she's not in the band anymore. That's a whole other story. And then Tuck Smith and the Biters. I've actually since then connected with Tuck. I don't know how well you know them at all, but I've written a few songs with him too.
That could be
a chapter if there's ever another book.
Wow.
And lastly, all the people, not just from the other countries, but you know, that Kiss Navy connection on a daily basis, those have become some of my best friends.
It's becoming family, you know. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Did you guys feel like that final show, like the final two shows even, the shows were like almost secondary?
Absolutely.
Just like being there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. It was about the fans. Like you were saying, it's like being on a Kiss cruise. People from all over the world merged onto New York City.
Yeah.
And it was just an amazing experience. And I found that led up to the concert, and then the show was a letdown because it couldn't compare to our experiences with the fans. So, you know, I want to end this episode on a personal note. You know, I understand your experiences as a Kiss fan. I can relate to your stories because in a sense, you know, being a Kiss fan, you often feel like a celebrity, like a rock star. How many people could say that they could walk down the street and people just know you? You could go to another city, another country, and people just know you. You know,
it's funny you say that. So when Amber Wilde played, that was another thing that disappointed me a little bit. Like, you know, I wanted something else for an opening act. If they were going to have an opening act, you know, give me Bruce's band or give me Cheap Trick or Poison or something, you know, a little more fitting maybe. But I decided, you know what, I'm just going to wander the concourse during the opening act. And I bumped into so many people during that time frame. It was the greatest, maybe the greatest gift Kiss gave me that day. You know, I just walked around. I saw one of my cabin mates. I saw all kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And it was great, actually, that extra half hour or 40 minutes.
Exactly.
Wandering around, engaging with Kiss people. I'd rather have had that than any opening act.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing, right? Now that the band has reached the end of the road, you know, I feel like we're going to have less once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, less opportunities to be a rock star. And I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. So what would you say to those fans?
Oh, boy. You know, keep listening to music. I don't think my musical interest ended with Kiss. That started with Kiss. So, you know, keep seeking out new music. For me, I actually, on Fridays when iTunes releases new songs, I quickly look through anything rock related and just kind of sample it. I like, you know, especially if somebody writes songs, I like to hear new melodies. I like, maybe I'll discover something new. Most weeks it's absolute garbage out there, but sometimes I do. You know, going to concerts, I have my Kiss friends, but I actually have Butch Walker friends and Rick Springfield friends and even Kip Winger friends, you know? So it's kind of cool, you know, just keep connecting with people, keep going out to shows. And you guys kind of said it before, but I mean, don't be shy. If you have a chance to get up there and sing something or do it, right? Some experience, just freaking do it.
Don't
be scared. Don't hold back. You kind of, you only got one life to live. I'm going to live
exactly.
it.
Exactly. We only live once. Exactly.
Quote, trial by fire.
Yes, right. There you go. I know the words. Yes.
Yeah. So what about you, Scott? What comes next for you?
It's an interesting question. I mean, on one end, my life is the most predictable life ever, right? I'm a bank examiner at heart. I've been one for 30 something years. Sure, I deal with very unique banking issues that cut across the nation. But you know, I'm going to get up and I'm going to be a bank examiner at least for the next 5 to 10 years or whatever it is until I can, you know, retire. So I've got that to look forward to. You know, I've got my home life. I've got my wife, my kids, my puppies, you know. So my life is very predictable in many ways. I got basketball on Wednesday nights and, you know, I kind of have my routine that I like. But on the other end, I don't know what's next and I'm going to just keep jumping into things. Maybe I will do another rock camp at some point. I'm going to probably go on the Monsters Cruise coming up again, because even though the Kiss cruises have ended, you know, I now have my sort of Monster Cruise friends and there's been some great experiences through that. I'm going to keep writing songs. That's one thing that, I mean, I literally do that in my sleep to the point where I can't sleep some nights. And I still have this dream, and I don't care if I make one penny off a song. I want the songs out there. I want people to hear them. So Kiss Goodbye, that hasn't totally died in my mind. I got to keep racking my brain on how to get that out there. If you guys know how, please do it. But, you know, I'm sitting on, my buddy Pongo and I, we posted a new song that we did with Jeff Scott Soto called Faster Than a Speeding Sunset. It's a really good song. So we're sitting on three more Soto songs. I've got some other connections and songs in process out there. So you never know. And even locally, I get together and I jam with a few guys. We haven't done any actual live gigs beyond a few open mics, but we're not horrible, which is the best review we'll ever get. But you know, so I get together once a week and jam with some guys, and you know, so just I'm going to keep having fun with music and see where it goes.
Yeah, no, I was you know, I was thinking that it feels so great, man. So I never had the chance to meet you in person, but you know, after talking to you for a little bit more than an hour, it feels like we've been longtime friends, you know. So you're so down to earth and so humble, Scott. It's been a true pleasure, man, to have you on the show. Thank you so much, you know, for sharing all your experiences and stories, and being so open, you know, talking about your personal life and everything, man. It's amazing, man. It's been a great experience to have this episode with you, definitely.
Hey, my pleasure too. You know, it's funny when you get together with Kiss people, you could probably talk all day, right? Like the cruise. My voice is gone by the end of every single day. I'm just talking nonstop about, you know, different things that kind of struck a chord with us over the years, and we got this common bond, but like there's such a vast array of songs and things to talk about. It just kind of never ends.
Yeah. But you know, it feels like most of the time, and I think we all agree on that, it goes beyond Kiss now. You know, it's it actually transcends, you know, the limits of what the band did in the past or it's going to be doing in the future. Now it's about this, you know, it's about, you know, having friends and meeting fans and creating this community. That's amazing. Thank you so much again.
Well, hey, thank you guys so much. And I wish you all the best for the holidays and the new year.
Thank you. Same here, man.
This is a blast.
No, Claudio just said it. This is a fitting episode to follow the end of the road, because now that Kiss isn't touring anymore and we might see less of them, you know, minus the avatars, of course, this is what it's about. It's about Kiss fans connecting with other fans and experiences, and hopefully finding more opportunities to meet up in Kiss-related events, be it expos, cruises, whatever it is, you know. That's what the future of Kiss is, You know, it's us. It's sharing our passions. And I think, you know, this is a great episode to showcase that, having you on the show and showcasing your passions, because fans like you is what it's all about. That this you are the epitome of what it means to be a KISS fan.
That means a lot. Thank you, guys.
No, thank you. So, to the KISS Army, we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas, please send them to talktome@kissarmynationpodcast.com. Don't forget to like and subscribe and support the amazing guests we have on the show.
So we're going to take a short break for the holiday season. So we will return with a new episode on January the 7th. So until then, on behalf of Pasco and myself, happy holidays and have a safe and a happy new year, everybody.
Take care, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, like and subscribe on YouTube or follow us on Spotify, Podomatic, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to make yourself heard. Leave us a comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. See you all soon, KISS Army.